This episode is brought to you by KJK. Tired of the billable hour? KJK has a solution. The KJK GC Advantage program offers businesses comprehensive legal services in the areas of employment, corporate services, real estate, trademark, intellectual property, and estate planning, all for a set monthly fee. KJK serves as their clients' partners in business, not just their lawyers. Along with cost certainty and predictability, the KJK GC Advantage program gives clients peace of mind, knowing their projects will be handled quickly and efficiently, maximizing the return on investment on their legal spend. So don't go it alone. Let KJK help. Learn more by visiting KJK.com. 614 Startups Nation, welcome to another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. My name is Elio Harmon, your host, and I'm back in my very favorite seat, and I'm very, very excited to have my guest tonight, Carrington Carter of East Chop Capital. Carrington, welcome to the show.
Good evening. Good evening. Fantastic. I'm having to appreciate the invite. I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Yeah, man, you are somebody that I admire, I follow, and I've been watching the progress that you've been making. So, before I toot your horn, I'm going to give you a chance to toot your own horn by introducing yourself to my audience. And I always like to start every podcast this way. Let's start with a bit of the personal background and how you came to live in Columbus, Ohio.
Sure. Let's see. So I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, about an hour and a half up the road. Did my K through 12 education there. Did my undergrad at Hampton University, grad school at University of Pittsburgh. After grad school, I have a previous life before becoming an entrepreneur, a real estate guy, and a private equity guy. Previous life in pharmaceutical marketing and advertising. So I lived out on the East Coast for about 6 years. Abbott Nutrition recruited me to Columbus, worked there for a little bit, and then went out full-time on my own August of 2017, building a real estate portfolio on the background. And then been on my own full time running three companies since 2017.
Yeah, man, three companies. I think that might be a first on the show. I know there have been people who run in two companies or maybe a company and an angel, but three companies. I know you have your plate full. That's a lot of balls to be juggling. But just as an aside on the personal side, what's the Dayton Hampton connection, right? What took you out to the East Coast for university? Why were you interested in enrolling and then eventually graduating from Hampton University?
So both my parents are Hampton grads. So that initially kind of put it on my radar. Through that connection, I'm very familiar with HBCUs. I went on an HBCU tour, I believe, junior year of high school. We went to a number of HBCUs, including Hampton. And as soon as I stepped foot on campus, I fell in love and decided it was going to be the place for me.
Okay, now, am I getting my HBCUs mixed up? Is there like a famous tree on the Hampton University campus? Am I wrong about that? What's the story with the tree?
Yeah, the Emancipation Oak. The Emancipation Oak is where the slaves in the area learned about the Emancipation Proclamation and learned about their freedom many, many, many years ago. But yeah, you're correct. It's Emancipation Oak. And there's also a statue on campus of famous alum Booker T. Washington, who's pointing at the Emancipation Oak.
Listen, man, if you got to be on a campus and walk by that thing every single day, it is a reminder, right, of kind of where we were at one point in history, how far we've come, and in some cases, how far we are yet to go. And so your journey, you kind of did your corporate thing, being recruited by one of the largest companies here locally, Abbott. When did you know? Right? Was it in college? Was it as you were working in corporate? When did you know you wanted to become an entrepreneur? And, you know, like me, 614 Startups is kind of my first official venture outside of working in corporate. What was that first venture for you to get you started as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. So growing up, you know, I did kind of the typical thing, you know, selling candy and CDs and jewelry and stuff in middle school and high school. So I would say that's probably the initial kind of bug. But at Hampton, we read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm sure you're familiar with it, or if you haven't read it. And that really planted the seed of just the concept of having your money work for you and building wealth. So I would say reading that kind of planted the seed. Two other things I'd like to highlight that kind of got me thinking about entrepreneurship. Part of it had to do with, you know, my dad's experiences in corporate America as a black man and some of the racism and challenges that he experienced, especially working in the automotive industry. So I decided I never wanted to solely be dependent upon a corporate career. And then fast forward after grad school, summer 2008, I started, you know, my first real job, summer 2008, fall 2008, the economy started softening, spring 2009, full-blown recession. Thankfully, I kept my job, but a lot of people lost their jobs or couldn't get jobs. So that's when I decided to kind of get into entrepreneurship, first through real estate, with buying a portfolio of single family homes in my hometown of Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah. I mean, even in 08, entrepreneurship as a career was still kind of early, right? The expectation was you went to school, you went to grad school, you're going to get this great job and work your way up the ladder. Did you have any pushback, right? Or was it that, you know, because like you said, you mentioned your parents and their influence of maybe even putting Hampton on your radar, and in your dad's experience, was there any kind of combination of that where you had to think to yourself, hey, should I just go the tried and true route? You know, did you get any pushback there? And then maybe that experience was just so overwhelming with your father that it encouraged you to ultimately take the step. What was that decision-making process like for you?
Yeah, I don't know if there was any pushback, but maybe just a lack of belief in the vision. I mean, because I did the whole traditional business plan. This is what we're going to do. We're going to buy a single family. Then we're going to do multifamily. Then we're going to get into vacation homes. And we're going to create this portfolio where people can use the houses and rent them from us and go on vacation. I certainly discussed that with my family. And I sent the business plan out, you know, in traditional fashion to about, I don't know, 10 or 15 of my classmates, fraternity brothers and things like that. Not many people bit on the idea. So I would say there wasn't necessarily pushback, but just maybe not belief in our ability to create this real estate portfolio and then this vacation rental home portfolio.
Yeah, man. Belief is so critical to entrepreneurship, right? And the first person that you have to sell on entrepreneurship is yourself, and having a vision. And sometimes that mentor, right, who may have gone through that path, somebody that you could look up to. Now, was it real estate from the beginning or kind of the Kiyosaki, rich dad, poor dad had some influence on it? Why real estate versus anything else?
Yeah, I think part of it was rich dad, poor dad, and just having understand the concept of having your money work for you. I think also, I mean, real estate has a well-documented history almost since the beginning of time as a way to build wealth. And have power and influence and generate income. So I think it's kind of also that aspect. And then if you think about, you know, what happened during the Great Recession and just what happened to asset prices and real estate values, I started investing in neighborhoods that I knew, that I drove by every day, that I had friends and family living in. And I just knew it was only a matter of time before those values would rebound. So it was a couple of different factors that created the perfect storm, which caused me to get into real estate. And then shortly, I'll talk to you about, you know, how we got into the luxury vacation rental home space.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to get into luxury, right? The place where I want to be, okay? The big mansions, the 8-bedroom with the whole family with you. We got to talk about that. But before we get into that, you talk a little bit about belief and comfort. When I think growing real estate markets, Dayton, Ohio is not like, right? You think Florida, you think Miami, you think New York, you think LA. Was it just that, hey, if I'm going to start anywhere, let me just start in my hometown? Or what was it that you saw in the Dayton market that says, hey, if I'm going to start a business, I'm going to be in real estate, I want to be in Dayton, Ohio?
Yeah, I think it's you know, a neighborhood I grew up in, I was intimately familiar with. There are a variety of different strategies, but our strategy has kind of always been investing in houses and neighborhoods that I would live in. So that's kind of how we got our start initially. Also, I often advise people, especially when they start out investing, to invest in affordable markets, which are often in the Midwest and in the South, even though real estate prices have increased quite a bit. But it's hard to build wealth and get started in real estate in some of the high price markets, New York, LA, and things like that. So that's why we kind of got our start in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, man, I get down to Dayton. I used to get down there more when I worked with my brother and his home health agency, because he had a branch down in Dayton. Listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you're interested in real estate. I'm not trying to create any competition for Carrington down in Dayton, but I'm saying you need to give Dayton a look. All right.
Yep.
And here comes the pun. All right. It is a gem, right? AKA the gem city for real estate. It is definitely a gem you should put on your radar. All right. I only in my research had you down for two businesses. You're telling me you're running three firms right now. I have McKinley Carter on my list. And of course, East Chop, which we're going to get into. But what's the third company you're running? And give me the value proposition for that third company and McKinley Carter.
Yeah, still related to real estate. So McKinley Carter Enterprises is the traditional real estate. Your single family, small scale, multifamily, some commercial. Getaway Society is our customer facing brand for our luxury vacation rental home portfolio. So this is what guests see on social media. Getaway Society is where we send out marketing emails, you know, coffee mugs and tchotchkes in the actual house. So Getaway Society is our customer-facing brand for luxury vacation rental homes. We are in seven states. We're in Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, Hilton Head, South Carolina, Orlando, Gatlinburg. We are in the Pocono Mountains, Broken Bow, Oklahoma. We are building in the Texas Gulf Coast and a beach community called Port Aransas, Texas. So we're in about seven states, and we are rapidly expanding.
We're going to get to East Chop in a second. All right. But since this is a new kind of business for me, I want to explore the reason why you launched another brand. Right. Why was it important? Maybe not just to continue with McKinley Carter and East Chop, you know, is the investment side. I get that. But why the customer facing brand? Why was that important to you to add a third arm to your empire?
Fantastic question. So Getaway Society is our customer facing brand. That's what the guests know. So whether it's what they see on social media, Instagram, Facebook, whether they receive email communications from us or coffee mugs in the houses or other tchotchkes, Getaway Society is our customer-facing brand. When we first set out in this journey to build a vacation home portfolio, we knew that we were in it for the long haul and wanted to be a multi-destination company. So we created a separate brand for guests to connect with, be a part of, and hopefully grow with us over the long haul. So that's why we launched a separate brand.
All right, great, man. I love it. I love to get away. I wasn't a big traveler until I got married, and my wife is definitely part of the Getaway Society. So we are typically on the road trying to experience the world. The world is such a big and beautiful place. It's very important for you to get out there and experience it. And so why not do it in luxury? All right, now there's a word that you use. You said you are building. I imagine the Airbnb Society. I mean, I watch a fair amount of YouTube. I get these videos say you don't need to own. You don't need to build. Let's say somebody owns this property. You could get it from them. You could flip it. You could be you could turn it into a rental property. But I heard you say build. Break down that word build in terms of the way you approach the vacation rental space.
Great question. So, again, this goes to our belief in owning real estate, especially long-term, is a key to building long-term wealth. So through various entities, we own all of our properties, either my wife and I, my partner and I, Calvin Butts and his wife, April. So either we own them together, own them separately, or we also own them through our East Chop Capital private equity firm. So we own all of our assets in one way, shape, or form. You spoke to the strategy of Airbnb arbitrage, where somebody else owns it and you're the property manager and you build a portfolio and you're a service provider of a vacation home or a travel experience, but you don't own the asset. I'm sure there are ways to be successful at using both strategies, but we've chosen the ownership route. You mentioned build. So we built our first house in the Poconos from the ground up, a 6-bedroom, 3-bath, 2,800 square feet. We built it for $425,000 fully furnished, which is unheard of now. When you think about the construction costs now, but we broke ground in 2014 and it was fully operational in 2015, quickly scaled to the Vineyard and then Hilton Head. And, let's see, we built also in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. We just broke ground on construction on a 12-bed, 15-bath, 13,000-square-foot home in Orlando, Florida. So we do a combination of build, turnkey, and then value add. Those are kind of the three buckets we play in.
All right, Carrington, man, this is an exciting start to this conversation. we need to take a break to hear from our sponsors. So when we come back, we're going to learn a little bit more about this vacation, especially the luxury vacation rental space, right after these messages. We'll be right back. Support for the 614 Startups podcast comes from Nationwide. Nationwide's mission is to protect people, businesses, and futures with extraordinary care. To help fulfill that mission, Nationwide is looking to invest its $350 million venture capital investment fund in InsurTechs that will help them create new and exciting products and solutions to meet the needs of their customers. If you're interested in partnering with Nationwide's venture capital team, visit nationwideventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is nationwideventures.com. Nationwide is on your side. This episode is brought to you by Rev1. Rev1's mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. As you navigate the waters of business entrepreneurship, you don't have to go it alone. A strategic partnership with Rev1 connects innovators to the talent, customers, space, and funding you need when you need it. Get started with Rev1 Startup Studio by visiting rev1ventures.com to learn more. Again, the website is rev1ventures.com. 614 Startups Nation, welcome back. Thank you so much for hanging in there with me and Carrington Carter of Getaway Society, East Chop. And what's the third one again, Carrington?
McKinley Carter Enterprises.
McKinley Carter Enterprises. Listen, man, this guy has more tax write-offs than the average billionaire, all right? So we want to talk about the luxury vacation rental space. Break that space down. It seems like it's emerging, this vacation rental thing with Airbnb, but I'm sure there was an industry there before, there's an industry there now, and there's going to be an industry into the future. So break down the luxury vacation rental market for us.
So luxury vacation homes. So I would say the industry has been around for decades, but because of technology, platforms like Airbnb, HomeAway, Vrbo, Expedia has enabled the facilitation between a renter, someone who's looking for a house, and an owner, someone who owns the house, and really make that a seamless transaction. So that's why the industry has been adopted and accelerated so quickly over the last maybe decade or so. In addition, with COVID, we just experienced a global pandemic, and a lot of people experienced vacation homes for the first time because a lot of hotels and resorts were shut down. And people had a positive experience. You know, with a large luxury vacation home, you often have a private pool, private kitchen where you can prepare meals together. There's no public lobby or public stairwells or elevators or things like that. So a lot of people were introduced to this asset class for the first time. We specialize in 4 to 12 bedroom houses. So multiple families, multi-generational, couples trips, group trips. That's the segment that we focus on. And right now, as I mentioned earlier, we are in 7 states and we'll be expanding to 9 states very soon.
Okay, great. So let's define luxury for a second when it comes to vacation rentals. Not all properties are created equal, but where do you kind of define luxury for your brand? Meaning, what are those amenities, those components that make this a luxury rental?
Yeah. So location is part of that. We typically focus on locations near lakes, beaches, mountains, and entertainment destinations. You have your beach getaways like Virginia Beach. We have a home in a private beach community there called Sandbridge. Martha's Vineyard, which has an island vibe because it's an island located off the coast of Massachusetts. We're investing heavily with 2 homes now. We're building 2 more, and we sold 2 down in Orlando, Florida, the entertainment and tourism capital of the world with Disney and Universal and SeaWorld. So location is a part of it. But also a big part of it is the amenities in the houses. Our houses have, many of them have outdoor pools. One, we have an indoor pool, game rooms, arcades. Many of the bedrooms have private ensuite bathrooms to create that privacy and that positive guest experience. Outdoor grills, hot tubs. So whether it's location, amenities, or size, that's how we define a luxury. One last thing, many of our houses are located in resort communities. With golf courses or located near national parks or near lakes where there are a lot of lake activities. So those are some of the components that help us define what a luxury vacation home is.
All right. So as I'm searching for my vacation, describe your target customer, right? Who is the getaway society customer? The person that you know, hey, this is our ideal person that's renting from us. This is who we want to target. This is who we talk to in our advertising. Who is that customer?
Yeah. I'll say right now, our locations are typically, kind of your family-friendly destinations. 60% of our target audience are, your traditional family vacations. Spouse, kids, uncle, grandpa, grandma, all coming together. I would say 30% are couples trips. So, coming together and everybody has their own private bedroom with bathroom. And then they come together and convene in the kitchen and enjoy meals together. And I would say the last segment are, kind of co-ed trips, people just coming together, meeting up, singles or couples, kind of an intermixed bunch. But I would say those are kind of the main three segments that we have. I will say because we are a luxury and because of where our houses are located, we are kind of at the higher end of the pricing spectrum. But one of the reasons why we like vacation homes, especially the larger ones, is a group can amortize the cost over a greater amount of people. So whereas, staying at the Ritz-Carlton with one couple may be out of reach from a pricing standpoint, but getting a luxury vacation home and splitting the cost over multiple family members or friends makes it more affordable on a per person basis.
Yeah, man, I have all three of those scenarios in my near future, right? So just go to a luxury house with my wife and just visualize, right, that experience of waking up in that future home, doing a big family vacation, and then, of course, getting together with other couples, which we try to do on a regular basis. We've done something down in Hocking Hills, but getting out of the city, getting out of the state, getaway society is an option for us. But how do we find you, right? So traditionally, prior to this conversation, I would have just gone to Vrbo or Airbnb or, like you mentioned, Expedia. Are you integrated in those platforms? Are you completely on your own platform? How do people find you right now?
Yeah, we consider those channel partners. So our homes are listed on Vrbo, Airbnb, Expedia. We also have our own website where all of our properties are, and guests can come to our website, getawaysociety.com, and book with us. We're also on social media at Getaway Society on Instagram and Facebook. Love for people to join our email list to stay connected. We own all of our assets, as I mentioned, but we also work with local property managers. So they have their own marketing channels and platforms that our houses are on. So we use a multifaceted approach in order for guests to find us and stay at our homes as an option for their vacation.
But is it fair to say if I book on getawaysociety.com, all the revenue, right? Not saying that, hey, channel partners, if you're watching, like, we love you too. But I'm guessing that if I book on getawaysociety.com, more of that revenue gets seen by you.
That's correct. And then the guests can obviously save from the fees that the channel partners charge.
All right. So all of this requires funding. So we've talked about Getaway Society. We've talked about McKinley Carter. Now let's talk about East Chop Capital. Why did you decide to become an investor in this space and not just an entrepreneur or owner of properties?
Yep. Fantastic question. So I would say the first 5 years or so of our journey was all self-funded. Myself, my wife, my partner, Calvin Butts Jr., who lives in New Jersey, and his wife, April Butts, had some other minority investors, Jeremiah Myers, Ron Ward, Brian Scher. All of it was initially self-funded, but as we grew, more people asked how they can invest alongside us and be a part of our journey. So we thought the best way to do that would be to create a separate private equity firm, East Chop Capital. And then naturally, our first two real estate funds will be focused on the luxury vacation rental home market. East Chop is a section in the town of Oak Bluffs on Martha's Vineyard, where our first two houses were. It's a magical place. It's a place where we have a lot of love and has a lot of African American history. So we felt it was appropriate to name our private equity firm East Chop Capital. Our funds are doing fantastic in this space. And through founding this private equity firm, in short, we discovered the power of bringing folks together, bringing capital together, like-minded people, and doing more together than we can as individuals. Under East Shop, we have about 130 LPs, 130 limited partners or investors. About 90% are Black, 10% white, or about 18% women. And aside from vacation homes, we've gone on to invest in other entities, other companies, other startups, other VC funds and real estate funds. And again, we kind of discovered that, you know, just having conversations and bringing people together.
Yeah. And the conversation that's, I think, that's been had more times than most is around issues of Black founders raising capital for their companies, for startups. You with East Chop, you're now on the other side, which is you're raising a private equity fund, or you have raised a private equity fund. Even though you started this fund based on feedback from the market, other people saw what you were doing, they were interested in investing in you. What was that experience like? What is the difference between trying to raise the capital for your company and trying to raise capital from investors to then go on to invest that capital with an expectation of return?
Great question. So, I mean, we chatted a little bit before this started. I mean, it's tough as a Black founder, whether you're a Black founder growing a company or whether you're a Black fund manager raising money to deploy and invest on behalf of investors. I will say our community really showed up for us with our East Shop Capital private equity firm, and across Fund 1 and Fund 2, we've collectively raised $15 million, all from individual accredited investors. Where we have not gotten the support is from institutional investors. You've seen the stats around money going to Black founders, or lack of capital going to Black founders, Black fund managers, diverse fund managers. We've experienced that too. We thought it would have been easier because, one, a lot of companies have publicly talked about their diversity initiatives. Secondly, we thought it'd be easier because we have a 10-year track record in this space, including 5 years deploying capital as fund managers. We've returned money back to investors and our returns are strong, but we just have not had the institutional commitment. It's actually funny because there is a competitor here in Columbus. I won't mention any names, but are in the luxury vacation rental home space and have received hundreds of million dollars in support competing in the very same space that we are, in the markets that we're competing in. But you know, we're going to keep plowing on. We're not going to stop. We've been doing this for 10 years. We're going to keep going. But sometimes it is frustrating at the lack of support that Black founders receive and Black fund managers receive as well.
Listen, when it's in theory, it hurts less, but when it's in your face, it hurts more. Yeah. When you know you're a couple blocks down the road, there's somebody else a couple blocks up the street, and you guys are pitching the same people or maybe similar people, and you see money going in one direction and not the other. I get it. Yeah. When you're talking about the problem being institutional, though, unless there is change, these problems will persist. Do you see solutions on the horizon where we could see movement when it comes to that institutional decision-making process being changed, where we would actually start to see some movement in that area? What are your thoughts on some of the solutions to that problem?
Yeah, I mean, you hear some success stories here and there. I would say some of the pushback that we get is track record. However, like I said, we've been doing this 10 years in real estate and vacation homes on our own, 5 years managing funds. So that's not really a valid argument. But even so, other people often get shots without having a track record. They get a chance with hundreds of millions of dollars. One of the things that we say, and this is, you know, and some truth to this, but our asset class, even though vacation homes have been around for a while, a lot of institutional investors are comfortable with multifamily, maybe single family to a certain extent, commercial, even though commercial is not doing well, hotels. So I will admit, you know, we're a niche asset class, but we're performing and we have the track record. Yeah. So again, some success stories that you hear. But I mean, we've had the support of our community, raised $15 million from individual credit investors. If that's the road we have to continue to go to scale, then that's the road we're going to take.
All right, man. So I know at some point at scale, I believe that 614 Startups has a role to play to talk about these issues, have conversations, not just on the microphone, because there's a lot of that happens, but behind the scenes, right? How can we have some conversations that are actually impactful enough to see some changes? So it is my vision, right? Like you talked about your vision, at least initially, to be able to have a voice strong enough to make some change. All right. We're going to keep it on a high note, though. This is not a podcast about problems. This is a podcast about solutions and about the success of the entrepreneurs that we have on. All right. So I want to get into investment thesis and deal evaluation. So how do you go through, what's your decision-making process at EastChop for the companies and or projects that you invest in?
Great question. So I'll start from a vacation home standpoint. Our thesis with Getaway Society and with our EastChop Capital Funds. First part, real estate is a cash generating hard asset. I think we've seen kind of what happened to technology and tech valuations over the last couple of months or so. Real estate, way to consistently build wealth. Secondly, the rebound in travel post-COVID. You know, the world shut down and there's still a lot of pent up demand. So that's a core part of our strategy. Three, the demand for drivable leisure destinations. Even in softer economies, people don't stop going on vacation. They just change how they go on vacation. So maybe instead of flying to Dubai or the Cayman Islands or Jamaica, they're going to be looking to that nearest destination, 30 minutes up to 6 hours to drive to. And then lastly, remote work. So remote work, there are a lot more people that are working remotely. And so a lot of times people are working from our houses. So our thesis under EastChop Capital. So we are a real estate focused private equity company. Real estate will continue to be our focus, specifically hospitality. We are starting to look at hotels a little bit and more traditional real estate development. But outside of real estate, I kind of mentioned unlocking the power of our investment community, where we've gone on to invest in other companies and entities, whether it's Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey, whether it's investing in Alexis Ohanian's 776 Fund or Nazir Qadri's Zeal Capital Fund, Instacart pre-IPO. So we've made some other investments, but I would say, you know, kind of at the core when we're evaluating investments, the passion and the purpose and the why of the founder is very important. What keeps them up? What keeps them up at night? What keeps them going? The team that they surround themselves with, and the team that they are working with in order to execute their vision. Experience plays some bit of kind of our evaluation, but also potential, and being able to recognize that potential. And then lastly, skin in the game. You know, everyone doesn't have capital in order to invest in the company. We definitely want to look for our skin in the game from a founder or a team before making an investment. And I'll say there are industries that we like: travel, hospitality, real estate, financial services, sports. We're also looking at some professional sports deals. But we are industry agnostic, but it has to be something that we're passionate about, something that interests us. There are a million deals out there. But again, it has to personally interest our leadership team, the EastChop Capital leadership team, in order for us to take a look at it.
Yeah, man. So, you know, you can't, we can get to know each other, we can have fun, but I got to hit you with some thoughtful questions here, okay? Go a little bit off script. So sure. You sit in both seats, right? You raise capital and you deploy capital. How do you avoid falling into the same trap that we just described our institutional friends falling into, meaning a bias towards your own preferences? How, as an investor, are you putting guardrails in place at EastChop where the deals that you tend to grade as investment ready tend to align with your preferences? I think that is a fundamentally human question. How are you thinking about that at East Chop?
That is a very good question. And I mean, candidly, I would say that I think it's about balance. I think it's about balance. And that's why I think it's important for there to be more diverse fund managers, more women fund managers who have capital and who have the ability to deploy. Because, I mean, human bias is going to happen. But if there's a, if there's a better distribution of capital to deploy by all types of individuals, then it'll get to a diverse founder representation for different companies that are being built. So, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, shy away from the fact that we do have a bias to supporting Black, Brown, and minority founders. And I think that's part of the role that we need to play in the ecosystem in order to make sure that there's balance and diverse representation.
Yeah, man, that's why you guys come to 614 Startups, because we ask the real questions. All right. Listen, Carrington, I'm enjoying this conversation, but we have to take our final break before finishing our conversation. All right, folks, you listening to my conversation with Carrington Carter of East Chop Getaway Society. And I keep forgetting the third one. Oh, yeah, McKinley Carter. We'll be right back after these messages. Today's episode is sponsored by the City of Dublin's Division of Economic Development. The City of Dublin provides world-class tailored business services and resources to ensure the best possible environment for businesses to recruit talent and thrive. Because of this strategic focus and commitment to employer growth, Dublin is the only accredited economic development organization in the state of Ohio. The City of Dublin supports startups and entrepreneurs by offering targeted resources and training programs to grow companies that are financially sustainable, innovative, and committed to creating jobs. Learn how other businesses depend on Dublin. Visit thriveindublinohio.com. 614 Startups Nation, we are back for our final segment with Carrington Carter of Getaway Society, McKinley Carter, and East Chop Capital. Finally got all three of them right. Let's talk about successes and milestones. Let's celebrate with you for a moment. What are some big successes, big milestones that you hit, that you've hit, that you're super proud of? And what are some milestones that you guys have set for yourself into the future that you're looking forward to reaching?
Sure. I would say first, you know, just kind of where we are and what our team has built. Myself, Calvin Butch Jr., Leonard Allen Smith, who's in New York, Zarek Scales, who's out in L.A., and certainly with the support of our wives and our family. We didn't grow up on Wall Street. You know, we didn't go to a Wharton or a Yale or one of the traditional private equity or VC firms. But we jumped in and we built the company, and we've been doing this for the last 5 years. So I'm proud of the journey and what we've done so far. There are not too many companies that, I mean, in essence, we've raised $15 million to grow our vacation rental home portfolio and our brand, all from individual accredited investors. So we're proud of that feat and our LPs who have supported us. We're also generating strong returns. We distributed, I believe, $2 million back to investors last year, $2 million the year before, on track to deliver 27% returns net of fees. So at a time where the economy might be shaky and whatnot, we're giving money back. And this is putting literal wealth and money into the pockets of hundreds of families in our, you know, East Chop Capital LP portfolio. So we're proud of that. And then also, I mean, we have, you know, luxury properties in 7 states, soon to be 9, that are providing, you know, high quality guest experiences, and where we delight thousands of guests a year. So we're also proud of that. As far as, you know, kind of next milestones and where we want to go, we are building 4 houses at the moment, so really looking forward to how those turn out. When all is said and done, we want to be, you know, a private equity firm with over $1 billion in assets under management, or AUM. I think the way we're going to get there, so we have our Fund 1 and Fund 2 focused on vacation homes. I think in order to scale with institutional support, we're going to have to invest in more traditional real estate, hotel, commercial, multifamily, in order to get us at scale. And then after we built that track record, people will see, oh, these guys are not just vacation homes. They're commercial, they're hotel, they're multifamily, they're real estate development. I think that's how we're really going to really grow out this firm. Some of our investors have gone on to purchase their own vacation home. So they've gotten comfortable enough with the business. And so now, in addition to the returns we're generating for them, they're also building wealth through this asset class. So it's been a great run. And then lastly, I talked about my team a little bit earlier. Ray Dalio, billionaire hedge fund manager of Bridgewater Associates, talks about this principle of meaningful work with meaningful relationships. And so I think ultimately all of us want to do what we want to do with the people we want to do it with. And we're certainly doing that with East Job Capital, with Getaway Society, and with McKinley Carter Enterprises. And so it's an honor to be in this position.
Yeah, man, you have a lot to be proud of. And I know the I don't want to call it the struggle, the grind continues.
It's a struggle.
Oh, yeah. Let's call it what it is. Let's call it what it is. The struggle continues. But like you said, doing what you want to do with the people you want to do it with makes the struggle a lot better. All right. If somebody got excited, I know they're already on the Getaway Society website booking their vacation. But let's say they get excited and they say, hey, look, I want to support this work. I want to get to know Carrington. Well, how do people get a hold of you? And how do people get a hold of East Chop or any one of your other companies?
So certainly our websites are one way, getawaysociety.com or eastchopcapital.com. Also on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. My partner Calvin, Leonard, Zarek, we're all on LinkedIn. At Getaway Society on social media. At East Chop Capital on LinkedIn and Instagram. Email Carrington at East Chop, Carrington at Getaway Society. It's pretty easy to find us. But would love to host any of your viewers for their next vacation home, whether it's a family, couples, guys trips, girls trips, fraternity, sorority, church group, leadership retreat. Would love to host you. And then if you want to learn more about East Chop and our present and our future, I'll be glad to talk to you in more detail about that as well.
Well, Carrington, listen, man, three companies, you're a busy guy. I appreciate you taking some time to hang out with me and have this conversation. I end every episode with my one thing, and my one thing is pick an industry and master it. One of the issues with being an entrepreneur is this shiny object syndrome. And just from this brief conversation, I could see that you're going deep on real estate. And what that's going to allow you to do is probably build a fairly large house of brands. As you go into these different areas of real estate, you're probably seeing different problems. As you scale by building more and more properties, you're seeing the construction side of real estate and the insurance side of real estate and all of those other areas that you could probably build brands in. And so my one takeaway is, hey, if you're going to go into an industry, go all in. All right, folks, that's another episode of the 614 Startups Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Follow us on all platforms. And of course, follow Carrington Carter and all of his brands across all of their platforms and support him and his business. Until next time, peace. That's a wrap, folks. You can find this and all our episodes on our website, 614startups.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. Don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you'd like updates sent directly to your inbox, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on the website. To engage in the 614 Startups community, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at 614 Startups on all platforms and join the conversation. For sponsorship opportunities and collaborations, email us at info@614startups.com.